Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but it turns out therapy has some difficulties of its own. Finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online, convenient, and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your own home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's betterhelp.com.
Hi, I'm Tony Hawks, and I'm outside the Victoria and Albert Museum on busy Cromwell Road in the centre of London. And I've found my way here by means that you need not know about. But the point is, I am here, and I need to find my way around, and I'm with two people who are wayfinders. This is a documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Tony Hawks, and wayfinding is what this in the studio is all about. So I'm meeting two experts, Zoe Barrett and Patrick Ely from the design studio DNCO, who know more than most people about how to get from A to B. In fact, they know this huge building inside out.
We created the signage and wayfinding for the Victoria and Albert Museum.
So wayfinding is signs.
Yeah, in part it's signs. There's a little bit of a mixture of everything in it, actually. There's thinking about signage and the hardware of signs themselves, the things that you see on walls or hanging from ceilings. There's a little bit of psychology in it about understanding how people get around and navigate space. And there's a little bit of engineering as well, because you need to think about how you're going to create a product. And there's graphic design on top of that, which is about applying information to those signs. So wayfinding is both the process of finding your way, but also we think about it as the material that you use to find your way.
So we make sure that you have all the right signs in all the right places, and sometimes we dial that up so it's really loud and really brash because that's the type of place that we're in. Or like we are in the V&A, it's a lot calmer and it's that gentle kind of persuasion to move through the building. So it's being able to design something that can go into a system that the public may not even kind of notice until they really need the toilet, and that's when you know it's successful.
And you're responsible for revamping the signs inside. So let's go inside and take a look at how well you've done. Well, I'm in the magnificent foyer here of the Victoria and Albert Museum with it's ornate, it has pillars around, a wonderful dome with light coming in at the top. Mostly white, I would say, very light. But the signs that are up are black and white and hanging and quite modern. They're not in your face, but they're clearly visible. Patrick, talk us through what we can see here.
The signs you can see are fairly few. The whole brief with the V&A was to create something that was actually quite calm, quite quiet, and really complemented the architecture. The architecture, as you say, it's super impressive. This building is so detailed that if you put signs in there that compete with the work of art that's on display or the actual building itself, they have to shout really loudly. So you can see several signs that are hanging. There are a few signs that are mounted on the walls over there, which are the directories for the museum and show you how to get around. But the majority of signs are just tucked in the right sorts of places so that you come across them when you need them, rather than shouting really, really loudly and competing with what you see within the museum itself.
You could come in here, and if you had sort of London Underground kind of signs up, it would rather clash with what's all around
you.
It does, I have to say, sit very nicely and feel part of the experience, if you like.
Yeah, and that is really important for not overcrowding the museum.
And how do you avoid oversignage. So, for instance, if you send somebody to the right to the toilets, if you're me, you might just keep walking and then miss them. Is there, does there need to be an extra one with another? Like, I'm thinking of airports, you know, yeah, when yeah. There's always arrows and there's, but you don't want to overdo that here.
Yeah, so we basically moved in here. We spent months and months walking it, really understanding how people move through the space.
You're trying to figure out, for example, with toilets, you might make a decision to say, well, we'll always signpost people to the closest toilet. Or you might say, well, actually, we'll always sign people to the biggest toilet. So I think there are some decisions that you make up front, which then determine how many signs and where you put them in the building to basically move people around in the right sorts of ways. So you might end up walking longer than you thought, but hopefully you'll then kind of get another sign to pick you up and push you in the right direction.
Okay. And then behind me, we have the thing that I suppose maybe you had to put the most thought into. You correct me if I'm wrong, but the museum directory, the sort of map of the whole thing. Was that tough to do, Zoe?
Yes, so what we're looking at here is all six floors of the museum, and we redrew the whole map. So there were lots of things that they liked about the previous map and lots of things that didn't work for the users. But being able to design the map itself was a real labour of love.
So you've done some of the tricks that they maybe did in the London Underground map. Yes. It's like it's not to scale,
that's
it's not the right shape necessarily.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. It is a plan, but it is also a bit of a diagram in that sense. So it's real in the sense that you can walk around it and follow the right path,
yeah.
But it's, the spaces aren't 100% accurate, absolutely yeah. not. But we've given enough
detail, isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you can see the curve of a wall, or you can see the fact that a column is round and not square.
Yeah.
So there's some cues to help to navigate.
I'm just wondering, in some senses, your job's quite different to mine. If I on stage, I do a joke. If I don't get a laugh, I know immediately it hasn't worked. For you, in a way, if you've done your job well, you don't hear much about it.
Yes. Yeah. It's odd. You finish the project and you do have that kind of mourning of this. It's going on without you. But the best thing is that it can succeed without us. If they have to call us, then it hasn't succeeded.
And I've just seen behind me some people come, use the directory and walk away very, very happily. And they're not going to give you any credit for it.
No, that is the byproduct of our job.
So we've moved to a slightly quieter space here, and it's so I can talk to Philippa Simpson, who's Director of Design at the V&A. So, the signage. You brought in this team, who I've met, who are very lovely, but why did you need to change the signage in the first place?
Well, the museum is quite a labyrinth, built over a number of different phases, and the buildings are very difficult to navigate for visitors. And the previous system didn't help an enormous amount, to be honest. It divided the collections into categories that weren't familiar, it wasn't intuitive, and it was also quite disruptive visually. It was quite large, and it sat quite uncomfortably in the gallery spaces. So we wanted to introduce a new scheme that would help people explore, but not be too dictatorial. It wouldn't lead people, it would just allow people to kind of get lost if they wanted to, or to find the thing they came to see specifically.
And when it first came in, what was the response?
Oh, it's been completely positive on all sides, actually. And I'd say that's both from the sort of visitors, but also from the design community as well, the people who are sort of looking for problems, if you like. From our perspective, it was really helpful because it meant that while we're still first point of contact, the colleagues who stand in the entrances and welcome people in, actually you could feel confident pointing them onwards and you know that they'd be able to find their way. And yeah, I mean, it has transformed things, and actually as much the wayfinding that you see around as the map design as well, which has been really, really helpful, you know. So, yeah.
So the last time I saw Zoe Barrett and Patrick Ely, we were wandering around the galleries of the Victoria and Albert Museum. But today I've decided to come and visit them in their converted warehouse, which has now become their design studio, just near London Bridge. And this is where all their wayfinding magic takes place. Let's go in. Zoe, tell me a little bit about this building. It looks like an old warehouse or something like that.
This is DNCA's UK headquarters. So we are in a kind of three-floor old spice warehouse in Bermondsey, which is near the Shard. And we've been here now for about 10 years.
And we're going to sit in on a meeting of yours.
The other end of the spectrum to the V&A. So Paisley Museum, which is situated in a town called Paisley, which is just outside Glasgow, which is in Scotland. But it's a museum where we are going to be directing in a slightly different way than we've done at the V&A. So that's something we're going to be talking through today. So instead of having a long directory of content, we are directing people via kind of themes or concepts, which is a very different way of moving through a building. Okay. So we're debating that at the moment. Where we are in the process now is that we have done most of the strategy. So we know where all the signs are going to be going. We know 99% of what the content is. We have created the concept. So we know the look and feel of what all the signs will look like. But now it's about how do we make those signs? What are the materials and how do we fix them to the walls? So it's kind of the nitty gritty now.
I think most people would, me included, would have no idea that this level of detail goes into all this stuff. So it'll be really interesting to hear. It's like the fact that there's been a debate about how you fix a sign to the wall or whether you hang it from the ceiling and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's proper nerdy.
Complicated, because we're going to have to make two things and we're going to have to stick them together.
I listened to Zoe, Patrick and their colleagues discussing all kinds of wayfinding ideas for the Paisley Museum. Everything from how best to show walls on the museum map to what kind of icons to use to represent different areas of the museum. I was amazed by the amount of detail they went into about how they put signs together and what those signs might be made from.
I'm in two minds about whether we need to flute and apply to the wall in reverse, just because I think it's quite a lot of complexity.
Well, you wouldn't necessarily want to flute the back all the way along.
No, because you'd never be able to get fixing
them. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more complicated than...
Yeah. Where is the sign?
I'm surprised
we've
made it complicated for ourselves.
Exactly.
There's lots to agree and disagree about. After the meeting, I check in on how it's going for Zoe as the project leader.
We've taken the visual cues from some of the work that the architects have done in the building. We've designed signs with fluted backing. And so Patrick and the team were then talking through then is, do you make that out of one piece? Do you make it out of two pieces that slide together? Sometimes those conversations are, we need to draw things down because we're all imagining things differently, just like it was then. And we will probably agree on that with the client. But again, when we then appoint a contractor, with discussions with them, they may have a point of view which is like, actually, we completely understand what we're trying to create. This might be an easier way to do it.
Okay, and you're happy with the way that meeting went? I mean, there was no fight.
Yeah, fight.
No. I said we sometimes have a healthy debate.
We disagree.
Yes, it went really well. That was the first time we picked up the project as a group in a little while. So we were covering a lot of topics.
Do you ever find that because you have to go into such intricate detail with this, that you're dealing with a client that you think has now lost all sense of what it is anymore? Because it's, I did a thing once where I had to say, where good value comes naturally. It was a voiceover. And I thought, good, that'll be quick. And there were about eight clients there. And 25 minutes later, they're still saying, could you go up a little bit on the good? And the words lost all meaning to me by the time I'd done it. And I just wonder if that can ever happen. The overall picture can get lost.
Yeah, so the thing that's really important when we work on projects like this is that understanding our stakeholders from the very beginning, which is a fancy word for who's involved in the project and who are making the decisions. But we ourselves can get really obsessed with detail.
Yeah, I think you do get obsessed with detail. I mean, designers notoriously obsess over tiny things that nobody outside of the design profession will ever notice.
It was great to sit in on your meeting and see how things are going with the Paisley Museum, but I want to come back in a few weeks and see just how it's all unfolding. So a few weeks have passed now since I last popped in to see Zoe Barrett and Patrick Ely at their offices, and I'm there again today to see how their projects have progressed.
So you've just had the feedback from Paisley Museum now. What's the headline points they're making?
So happily, we've made good progression and they're super happy. So the things that have kind of moved on since we've seen you last is the map design is much more kind of refined now. We're getting it ready to go into testing. So we're going to be able to test colour, icons, whether it's clear whether something is a wall or not, which might sound silly, but it's very important to start with. And then also the icons, which we presented where we went kind of very illustrative, and then the other part was where we were much more kind of abstract. So through some really actually quite enjoyable discussion with the client, so we're pretty pleased with that.
So what happens next? You're going to have samples made and then they'll look at them, say if they like them or not?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We'll make some samples that take the approach that we're thinking of. The people that are going to create the samples will probably come back with a few questions. They'll probably come back with a few changes to the way that they actually create them. But we'll get a couple of samples back from that, which we can then present to the client, and they can say whether they like them, whether they don't, whether they want to change things from there.
So are you up against a deadline to provide all the answers they want?
Yes, so the museum itself will be opening about this time next year. That seems like quite a long way away, but there's a lot of kind of milestones that have to be hit beforehand. So our first deadline is the end of April, and then a programme will be built for how long the production will be needed, all the art working, so that it then can run smoothly and then be installed probably about this time next year, ready for opening.
Well, sounds like they've got plenty to be getting on with. I'm going to leave them to it, but I'll be back in a few weeks to see how they're getting on. You're listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but it turns out therapy has some difficulties of its own. Finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online, convenient, and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your own home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's betterhelp.com.
I'm Tony Hawkes, and I'm learning all about the art and science of wayfinding with expert navigators Zoe Barrett and Patrick Ely. And is there a short way of describing, Zoe, wayfinding?
So I'd say the easiest way to describe wayfinding to someone that doesn't know what that means is getting someone from A to B. And our job is to be able to get them there as smoothly as possible. So that might be through the design of the wayfinding, so the actual signs themselves, or with a particular strategy that then will help guide them through the space.
And Patrick, is there a favourite part of what you do?
I think I like solving the complicated three-dimensional problem that wayfinding is. It's fascinating to figure out how you want to get people around a space so they can find their way with confidence, but doing so in a way that is seamless, and creating elegant and beautiful objects that ultimately enhance the sense of place. That, for me, is what wayfinding is. When wayfinding is at its best, it's enhancing the sense of place.
If you go somewhere, do you ever see something and think, this signage is terrible here? What is bad signage?
Yes, all the time. Yeah. Yes, more than my family would like, actually. The thing that we often say is that graphic design is subjective. So you can like a book cover, and I might not like a book mm-hmm. cover. But wayfinding has to work or it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. If you can't find the toilet, or you can't find the shop, or more importantly, you can't find your way out, then it does not work.
Yeah.
And we will all have examples.
This is my summation of what you have to do. You have to combine creativity and practicality. Was that fair or was that oversimplification?
I think that's exactly it. Exactly that.
And do you get complaints ever direct, or does it always come through the client?
About whether something works or not? No, but I have definitely stood there when someone's like, where is the toilet? And you're like, no. But we have been very lucky. Our work gets tested every single day because you have hundreds and hundreds of people going through these museums and these galleries. And so we will hear if something is definitely not working. Touch wood, we've been very lucky to date.
That's not wood, you're in trouble.
I think we also, though, do sometimes have to change certain things. You know, we've revisited projects where we've had to add slightly different instructions or change maps or those sorts of things because it's been discovered that it doesn't work quite as intended. Yeah. So we do get that feedback, but I don't think we get people directly saying to us, I suppose partly that's because wayfinding is a hidden process. Yeah. Nobody knows that we've done it, so perhaps they don't know who to complain to. But you do hear from public buildings whether things are successful or not.
And who did the signage in IKEA that means you want to get out and they send you around 20 minutes of us?
That's the interior design of the space. I mean, that is a perfect bit of wayfinding. I mean, they designed those spaces so that you have to travel through the entire store before you can get out. That is architecture as wayfinding.
Yeah.
As well as answering all my questions about wayfinding, Zoe and Patrick also had some updates for me on the Paisley project in Scotland.
So we have, for Paisley Museum outside Glasgow, we have been looking at the map in particular. Mm-hmm. So what we have in front of us here are 10 different versions of the same floor, which is the second floor. And what we've been looking at is how we can use colour to show the difference between areas that are just kind of pure void and areas which they'll have to move through. So we look at that in two ways. So there could be facility areas, so the cafe, multi-faith room, the toilets, but then gallery spaces. So you'll see in some of these we've been using red, which is the brand colour, where we've started to look at different tones of red. And as you can see, that the ones down here, which are very bright red in the kind of void, so spaces which aren't galleries. And then we've been using two tones of greys for the transitional spaces and then the galleries to see how that feels. This kind of comes back to something you've asked us previously with how do we balance client feedback and our own.
This is for you to show to them and say, look, here are 10 different versions that are okay with us. Which one do you like best?
Yeah, we definitely have some ones that we favour and some of which we probably think aren't.
One and two up there, to me, look identical. What's different about them?
So what we've got difference here is starting to look at the kind of very close detail of colouring for icons and gallery spaces. So we do all of these variations to work out what will look right. Sometimes I wish it's a faster process, but you have to go through all of these 10 steps to get to the right one.
Absolutely. And Patrick, out of these 10 maps, do you have one that you like best?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are a lot of different issues that you're looking at when you're choosing something that works well. A lot of it's to do with contrast, and I think red and grey are complicated colours to always get right because they can clash, but I really like it when the red is being used strongly. Our client is less keen on that because they feel that there's a lot of red in the building and they don't want to kind of overdo the experience. But I think the red is really good for a visitor because they can clearly see what's a space they can move through and what perhaps isn't. That said, there's something very elegant about it when it's tones of grey, but I actually think the red gives it personality, ties it back to the brand, and using red in some way, whether that's either for the gallery spaces or for the void spaces, is something that feels exciting and very visible.
I look forward to seeing who won that particular argument.
So do I.
Next time I'm up there. So what are the next steps then, Zoe?
So the next step for testing the maps are to take a selection that ourselves and the clients have approved into kind of user testing. So the tricky one with this one is that the museum is closed and it's not going to be open till next year. They're still hard at work on site. So they can't stand in the space and say, and we can't say, okay, go from here to gallery 3.2 or to the toilets on the third floor. That's one way of user testing that we've done. We did that at the Victoria Albert Museum where we could quite literally go any time of the day to go and practice, seeing if it worked, friends and family, user groups. Whereas this, it's going to be the first piece of testing will be, how do they feel about use of colour? How do they feel about how icons are being used? And also just get their kind of first interpretation of, do they understand this as a map, not just as an illustration? So what we're doing at the moment is we're putting together much more succinct areas of topics that they'll need to kind of say yes or no to, so that we'll know whether it's the right thing. So it gives the client confidence to then say that's the one, and we'll put that into production.
Okay, and we've got a couple of samples here. What's this one here? This looks like, well, it says on the back MDF, but it looks better than MDF to me.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a form of MDF. It's called Valchromat. It's a really fine-grained MDF, so it cuts very well. It has no sort of burrs and shabby edges, but it's also dyed with a colour all the way through. So it's not something you have to paint. and get a colour on the surface, it's actually solid colour, you know, right the way through the material. This one's a red, and when you oil it or slightly varnish it in a certain way, that colour deepens. And this is a material that the architects have chosen to use within the building in certain places, and we think it's a really good way of creating signage as well, because the material will obviously then harmonise with bits and pieces of the architecture, and is also a beautiful bit of simple materiality that's very sustainable as well.
Yeah, it's lovely. So once you put text onto that, is it called Valcromat?
Yeah.
Once you put signage onto that Valcromat, that's final. You can't change anything, is that right?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it really depends on how you apply the text to the surface. If you use cut vinyl lettering, you can probably peel it off and reuse it, particularly if it's the Valcromat has been coated first to allow you to kind of lift the text off more easily. But we are actually also investigating different printing technologies and different solvents to be able to apply text to the surface with a printer and then remove it so that we can then reuse the panel. That's one of the biggest issues with signage generally, and creating wayfinding strategies that are flexible and, you know, maintainable over the long lifetime of a project. You don't want to put a sign up and then have to take it down 2 years later and throw it away and put a new one up. Yeah. What you really want to do is keep the same bit of hardware and reuse it. So yeah, that's why we're investigating how you can print and remove text depending on the different types of ink and solvent you use.
And what's the main reason why you change a sign? Is something's moved or different reasons?
Yeah, it'll be whether something's moved or they've decided to change how they want to guide people through a museum. So this isn't just the project for Paisley, this is any project. So commercial projects, which are office-based, that will be because teams have moved or they've sublet floors. So that's something we take into consideration at the very beginning. So we've done a project outside Edinburgh, which is powder-coated metal panels. So they'll be able to put vinyl easy on and off. Whereas in kind of museum spaces, the things that should change or hopefully don't ever change are where the kind of galleries are going to be. So that is less likely to make big changes. Whereas we're working with another museum in London where they're going through quite a few future capital projects. So where they're going to be changing small gallery spaces into bigger gallery spaces, they're going to change the purpose of the galleries. So even though we're working to have our signage in for the end of 2025, we have to anticipate changes they know they're going to make till about 2029. So it's the most important thing, actually, mm-hmm. when we're thinking about materiality, is we're looking at obviously how it looks, but it has to work for someone else to come in and update.
Yeah. And there's a couple of signs here that are ready to go, but have you taken these from somewhere else?
No, this is a production sample, essentially, of a sign that was done for the Museum of the Home. And this is interesting partly because it's got removable panels. So thinking about flexibility and how you might need to update a sign in the future, you can remove the panel, remake it or reapply the lettering and then slot it back into the system.
Exactly. So if you want to listen, I will now remove a panel. So this... Oh, no.
But also the thing about things being able to be removed is a member of the public should be able to just take it in
you
and
have
out.
To lock it down. So there's a security...
The public, you can't trust them.
No. So you'll see at the bottom right in front of you here, we have
been nailed in.
Tiny little grub screws. Imagine a tiny little Allen key. We'll then release this, come down, and then the panel will be able to slide to the left or the right.
Yeah, there's a world of security fixings, which is absolutely niche and really fascinating if you're interested in trying to prevent people from stealing things.
Yeah, or stealing things or giving people the wrong directions just out of mischief.
Yeah.
I would have done that. I would have
turned it around
and they would obviously Garden Studio Pavilion would have been written upside down. You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service with me, Tony Hawkes, and I've learned such a lot about wayfinding from Zoe Barrett and Patrick Ely in their busy studio. I'll never look at signs and directions in the same way again. In the studio, Wayfinding Experts was a tandem production for BBC World Service. And one final question. How do I get out of here?
To the left.
Where's the sign?
I know, we have the worst signage for a design studio.
Press freedom. The reasons why it's under increasing pressure.
How the mass use of drones has changed the way the war is being fought.
The trends behind the fast-changing media landscape. The Explanation from the BBC World Service takes a deep dive into the big stories affecting our lives, giving you an honest, unvarnished explanation of the world. Search for The Explanation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.